Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike. Sorry about that. Hey, hang on one sec. I just noticed something I gotta undo. Because I hear myself in my head. I hate that. There we go. Make sure everything else continues working. Now. Oh, good. I'm gone. I'm out of my own head. That's awesome. Hi, everybody. This is Doc Mike. A discerning observer of the world, I refuse to take what the mainstream media has to say as any kind of truth or fact. And we are just going to continue to do what we can to, you know, get the word out, man, that there's a lot of people lying to us today. And pretty much everybody, honestly, it's about everybody. Let me look at some notes here. Oh, yeah. Okay, let's do this. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I'm going to skip that next line. I'm going to change it. I said I'm just a guy shining light on the darkness, and holy crap, there is a lot of darkness these days. If you guys are on a social media platform, would you please post that we're live, and let's get some viewers. Let's get some listeners, some viewers, some chatters over here to Real Liberty Media, and kind of help build the site. Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern, Hal Anthony does a two-hour show packed full of information. The guy doesn't stop for 2 hours. No commercials, no breaks, no drinks. I don't know how he does it, but man, he does it. So 2 hours behind Woodshed with Hal Anthony, 3 p.m. Eastern time on Sundays. And of course, you can catch me every Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Anyway, oh, I just sucked some spit in my throat. Hang on. Okay, so I was going to talk about, you know, the little stuff, the stuff that, you know, we think might be important. Like, I was going to talk about how Washington State has just increased their gas tax by 58 cents per gallon by invoking a carbon offset tax, whatever you want to call it, carbon offset, whatever. That's just genius in a time like this. But Jay Inslee, of course, is a genius. He's the governor of the state there. Somehow they passed that. I don't know how they could have passed that. But, I mean, here's the deal. You get what you vote for, right? So the state of Washington, you know, apparently they like being taxed to death, and they like paying increased money for gases and for groceries and for everything else. But I got to say, California is going to one-up them a bit, because California is trying to pass a tax on the most wealthy individuals in their state. And here's the beauty of this tax, is that they're going to make it so that if those people leave the state, the tax is going to follow them. I just thought that was amazing that they would have the gall to even try something like that. Like, I'm 100% sure they can't possibly do that. And how stupid is this, that you would actually try that on the wealthiest people in the state? Because, of course, they're just going to lawyer up and take the state to court. They've got the money for it. You know, the poor guys don't. The average people don't. But, yeah, those billionaires are going to be leaving the state, or probably not, because maybe they will. I don't know. It's like between 1 and 10% tax on the wealthiest. And, of course, the idea is, as always, is to get everybody to vote for it, you know, to vote for a tax, any tax, to single out a particular target and say that we're going to tax this particular target. And then everybody votes for it, and then they go, oh, you know what? We're going to lower the amount that we consider, you know, the most successful or the most valued people in our state, and they'll just keep lowering it until they've added the tax on everybody, because that's how the government works. And before I get into tonight's show, yeah, so I was going to talk about that kind of stuff. Oh, or how Asians have finally made it here in the United States. I just wanted to say, so there's been like an incredible number of mass shootings. And yes, it's alarming. And I bet we're going to find out down the road. It probably has something to do with everything else that's going in the world, going on in the world right now, with the vaccine, with the virus, with the social distancing and mandates, and, you know, government overreach and inflation, everything else. It's I think it's driving people crazy. So please, everybody who's in my listening area, my listening audience, man, protect yourselves and be aware at all times, because you never know when one of these people is going to go off. And I think it's going to be important. I mean, obviously, you know, more and more of this is going on. And, you know, the only way to stop it is to be armed and to be ready. So please be armed and be ready at all times. Let's see. Man, I really want to get into this, to this topic today, but I want to kind of be careful, because I'm going to just tell you, a friend of mine turned me on to this documentary, and I'm going to tell you how this conversation sort of went, although I can't remember exactly, but it was kind of like, hey, have you heard about, you know, snake venom in the coronavirus? And it was in a text, and I wrote back, laugh out loud, no. And then they turned me on to this, documentary. And I got to tell you, when I watched the documentary, I was stunned for a number of reasons. One, there's a ton of information in this documentary. Number two, it made a ton of sense to me. Now, I think I'm a fairly smart guy. I know how to challenge things, and I think one of the things that we're going to find out, you know, as we get through this pandemic, as we hopefully fight our way back to some kind of state of freedom, I don't think we're ever going to get back to anywhere we've been, because kind of the modus operandi of the government is, once they've taken some, you know, of your freedoms away, they don't ever give them back, not totally anyway. You know, once they've made gains in one way or another, it's pretty much, you know, you're never getting that back. So I don't know what it's going to look like down the road. But there's a lot of people out there who are trying to educate people. And I was thinking about, you know, every time I stumble across some kind of information like this, that I think I probably could have discovered this on my own. I am really grateful for the guy who discovered this. His name is Brian Artis, and it's Dr. Brian Artis, and I'm going to talk about him in just a minute. But let's say, before we get into any kind of credentials, let's just say this. In this day and age, you don't need credentials to be anybody or make some kind of discovery or reveal information or expose some kind of corruption. You don't need any kind of credentials. And I'm going to tell you the truth, man. In my past, you know, when I was going through all this, I'm going to talk a little bit about the hierarchy of doctors, okay? So number one in the world is medical doctors. And there's some hierarchy inside that too. Like if you're a cardiac surgeon or a neurosurgeon, you're kind of at the top. And if you're a, you know, GP, you're kind of at the bottom. Just kind of. And I'm just speaking in general terms here, okay? And then below that is probably dentists, and below that is like shrinks, and below that is, you know, whoever. So there is some ladder, and we all, you know, whether you try to or not, you tend to credit or discredit people based on their standing in that community, you know, like, oh, he's a neurosurgeon, you know, and sometimes that's good. Like if you're having brain surgery, you want your brain surgeon to be the best in the world. You want him to be the top of his class, and you want him to, you know, not be on drugs or alcohol and whatever. But anyway, my point is, today, a lay person could have figured all of this out. Now, it may have taken some extra study for a lay person to kind of figure out all the facts and figures and the make the connections. But really, what this guy did wasn't any kind of magic that had to do with him being a doctor. It had to do with him having the desire to get answers. And I can totally respect that, because I'm one of those guys who, when something isn't adding up for me, I want to find out why it's not adding up. I want to go find a reason that makes sense to me. And I'm going to tell you just a little bit about where something like this could happen to me or anybody else. So way back when coronavirus came on the scene and people were talking about whether it was made in a lab or it wasn't made in a lab, and everybody was talking about, you know, well, it came from these bats. And I even jumped on that bandwagon at the time. It was like, you know, this virus is man-made. It is a gain-of-function virus, and it makes the most sense that it came from a mammal and that it was manipulated to infect human lung tissue. And I kind of talked about how they did that, and it made sense to me at the time. Well, it made sense to me because that was the narrative that the system wanted people to believe. I think today, my opinion is, they all knew that eventually it was going to come back to, yeah, this was a man-made virus, and we want you to believe it most likely came from these bats that hibernate in China in the cave that they said they found them in. And that bat genome, that bat DNA, that bat whatever, you know, it was manipulated. They added genes to it to make the bat virus, coronavirus, you know, penetrate human lung tissue, made it more readily available to be picked up by lung tissue. It turns out this is a complete lie. I don't believe it's a respiratory virus at all. And I think by the end of this, hopefully what I'm going to do is kind of review this documentary in a way that, if nothing else, you ask some questions. Not to me, not to, well, maybe the internet, but maybe just to yourself, you know. Does this make sense to you? And I hope I'm going to put these things together in a way that it will challenge you to ask some questions one way or the other, or not. And trust me, I don't really care if it does or not. I hope that it will. I hope that you will take this information, share it with some friends, talk it over, and see if it makes sense. And then where do you go from here? I'll tell you, I think I spoke a little bit on the last show that there was a time a year ago or so. It had to have been longer than that. In fact, I think somewhere in my notes I have it here, that I couldn't understand how the federal government, the CDC, was saying that they were testing wastewater and that they were finding variants from the coronavirus already showing up in certain cities. And they said, and then they said, so we expect there's going to be an outbreak in this city. And it didn't make sense to me. Number one, it didn't make sense to me that the CDC somehow already had a test for a variant that barely hit the scene a day or two ago. And I remember saying at the time, this doesn't make any sense to me. Like, how would they know? How would they have a test for a variant that just came on scene? Like, they have to kind of figure out that there's a new variant, and then they have to figure out, well, where is the variation in this virus, and then how do we make a test that identifies that variation, you know, and then go look for it, I guess, in wastewater, really? Okay, so that didn't make sense to me, but it does make sense to me today, and we will get there, but it's going to take probably the better part of the show. Hey, and if it doesn't, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go through this. If we get done before an hour, we're going to be done. I'll call it quits. If it goes beyond an hour, I think we're just going to keep going until we get this done. I think it's that important. I did want to ask a couple questions, I think, right off the bat. And they're at the back of my notes. And believe it or not, even though I have the greatest note-taking program, I didn't use it. I went old school and used a paper tablet to take these notes this time. I don't know why. Because it's so much nicer to sit at the computer here and look at the screen and read my notes, but I just didn't. Maybe a comfort thing or something, I don't know. Anyway, I just want to start off with these couple of comments. I said in my notes here, I am always grateful when some answer or fact that I could not make sense of is finally comes to light. And I have a question for you. Do you ever feel confirmation, or do you get that feeling when you are talking to someone and what they are saying doesn't quite add up? And I think a lot of people do. A lot of people, you know, have this intuition, you know, that they know when they're talking to somebody if it's, you know, they're like full of crap, basically, or if they're lying, or if maybe the person is misled. I mean, you know, when everybody in some kind of official positions is lying to you, sometimes it's hard to pull the truth out of somewhere. And where are you going to go for that truth? Maybe you have some people that you highly respect and you think, hey, this person knows what they're talking about, and they said this, and I'm going to go with that. But something just doesn't set right with you, you know? Anyway, I hope you enjoy the show, and I hope it makes you think. Whether you believe what I am presenting here or not, just think about it. Many people in the world today are not capable or willing to look further than their favorite app. And I'm not kidding about that. I think that what's going on in the world today obviously was orchestrated. I mean, how long have we been referring to it as a plandemic? But there was a lot of planning that went into this far before we got to this point. And I think one of the things that happened is, I think the powers that be, the social media platforms, the federal government, the Department of Justice, all of these entities constantly looked at data. You know, I removed, I don't know, 50 apps off of my stupid phone the other day because I was thinking, I haven't used these apps in so long, and why do I have these apps? Like, yeah, they make things easier, but also every single one of those apps is selling their information to whomever. But anyway, all of those entities, the federal government, the social media platforms, the, you know, both political, all political parties, all governments throughout the world, they're all processing data these days. Data that you freely give them. Because you say, Man, I got to have YouTube on my phone. Man, I got to have Twitter on my phone. Man, I got to watch my favorite, you know, binge whatever on my phone. I got to have TikTok on my phone. And those things are not free. You sell your soul to get those things on your phone. So I think what's happened just in the last, 25, 30 years that we've had internet connection, I don't know how long we've had smartphones, but, you know, we've had them for a couple decades now. I think, let's say 20 years. But in that time, they have constantly watched the data. Now, before that, of course, if you go back to public school systems and education systems, you can say, hey, we started making people stupid, a long time ago, maybe when I was in school, which was a really long time ago. But, there's somewhere along the way, we just started deciding that there were more important things in the world than teaching people how to find information, how to challenge information. You know, it had to be sometime after the 60s, because I think the 60s was one of the greatest eras ever when we had people who challenged authority. It's just sad that today those same people not only don't challenge authority, but they kind of get on the side of federal government and state governments and whatever the current, fad is as far as, whatever the government's telling you to do, and they're like on board with it. It's like the saddest thing I think ever came out of the 60s was those people who no longer challenge authority. You know, it used to be challenge everything, like question everything. And that's where I wish people were today. But here's the problem. We have maybe a generation or two now that have no idea how to critically think because it's not important anymore. It isn't important for you to challenge, whatever current subject is being taught, whatever the narrative is of that subject, to see if what you're being taught is true or if it's a variation of the truth or maybe it's just plain bull. Yeah, and you have kids today who depend on the government as the authority. They think the government knows everything and is, the ultimate authority. Well, whatever they say, that's what I'm doing. And they're not able to critically think. Hell, they're not able to identify food sources for crying out loud. Because they have more important things to learn, like what gender are they? Or what gender are their friends, or, critical race theory or whatever. Everything except like, hey, how do I identify food if I'm out in the forest? How do I cook something that isn't microwavable? How do I eat food if there's no power? So, I think that there was a plan ahead of time is to make everybody stupid enough that you could pull something like what I'm going to talk about today off. And the clock is ticking. We got to get to it. So I'm going to get into this. I have a couple comments that maybe won't make sense to any of us, but just to start off with. So remdesivir in October 20th of 2020, remdesivir was considered safe and effective treatment by the NIH's final report. It says remdesivir prevents one key enzyme from replicating. It worked versus MERS and SARS coronaviruses. It was going to be the guy who discovered all this information, his name is Brian Artis, and I'm going to tell you right off the bat, he is a doctor of chiropractics. Has nothing to do, absolutely zero to do, with what he put together here in this documentary. And the documentary is called Watch the Water. and we'll know in the end why we need to watch the water. And I hope some of this stuff really makes sense to you. He knew as soon as that statement was made that the NIH said we could use remdesivir to treat people, he knew that there was going to be people dying by the masses in hospitals. He knew that people were going to die. It was going to be a mass murder of patients, and the reason was going to be because of multiple organ failure. And why, you might want to ask. Remdesivir targets specific organs. God, did I start on the right page? I did. January of 2022, remdesivir approved to be the used to treat pediatric patients. It was FDA approved. At the time, it was called Veklury, V-E-K-L-U-R-Y. It was approved for in-hospital and out-of-hospital treatment for infants and children. Now, just imagine this. Okay, maybe we need to stop and ask for a minute. Why would the governments of the world want to kill their populations? Well, as you know, there are people in the world, the WEF, the Illuminati, whoever you want to call them, who say that the Earth can't support this many people, and they want people to die, and they want the population narrowed down to, I don't know, 500,000 people, 500 million, whatever the number is. But they want people dead. Well, it turns out you're going to see coronavirus was created in a specific manner. Remdesivir was created to, well, I would only say to make sure that people who were seriously affected by coronavirus actually just went ahead and died. I think it was a manner to make sure to kill off a certain number of the population. And here's the scary part about all this. You know there's something else coming. They're not, this number one didn't kill enough people yet. And if they're going to wait for everybody to die from blood clots and, you know, sudden cardiac arrest and sudden death, maybe it's going to take too long. So you know something else is in the works, which would be important when I get through this to understand what you have to look out for. Remdesivir is made of monoclonal or polyclonal antibodies. Something else that is made from monoclonal antibodies is antivenom. Now, this guy will go into a little conversation, and I really encourage you to go watch the documentary, Watch the Water, because he talks about some things that are important about what, like, stimulated him to go in search of this information. There were a couple things that were very powerful that he claims God talked to him in some way or another, or signaled him that he needed to stay focused and find this information. And he was moved into getting this information. Anyway, so antivenom is made from monoclonal antibodies. Here's the deal with Dr. Artis. It isn't important what his credentials are. Anyone could have found the information and came to the same conclusion. Yet Dr. Artis is a doctor, chiropractor, but dismiss his information based on that information of your own peril. Antivenom is mono or polyclonal antibodies. Steve Kirsch said to Dr. Artis way back when, well, they were sharing a floor together speaking about, coronavirus and treatments. And Steve Kirsch said, whatever the government says, do the opposite. He said this on the floor of some committee hearing, and he said it when Dr. Artis was there. He said, if the NIH says to do one thing, do the opposite. If the CDC says to do one thing, do the opposite. If the FDA says to do one thing, do the opposite. Basically, he said, whatever the federal government is telling you to do, do the opposite. I wish I would have taken that advice over 2 years ago. These government entities badmouth mono and polyclonal antibodies. They badmouthed ivermectin. They badmouthed chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine and N-acetylcysteine and acetylcysteine, which you'll know why that is important in a minute. All of those things were found to have worked to keep people alive, number one, and to reduce the severity of disease of coronavirus. And it's going to be really simple to see why they all worked. Hopefully, I make it clear. So Brian Artis was thinking to himself, because somebody he respects, a doctor, sent him a text and it said, if you got a snake bite, would you go get anti-venom? And so he decided to look into this, and somehow he started thinking, well, you know, so is coronavirus anti-venom or a venom? And why would they not allow anti-venom? Oh yeah, so monoclonal antibodies or polyclonal antibodies are also, that's how they make anti-venom, okay? So he's thinking to himself, okay, why would that doctor have written me that? And he went in search of. So he typed into the computer, is coronavirus made, did it come from snakes? And it turns out that about all the things that people said that this virus may have come from, which was mainly bats, pangolins, and I forget. I mean, there were a couple things from the, you know, wet food market that they said, well, it could have transferred to humans from this wet food market. So of all the things that were put in there, every time snake came up, the fact checkers, which he describes as, he says, fact checkers don't really tell you something is true or false. Their job is to give you some kind of information, and in some cases, yeah, they're going to tell you that, you know, things are not true, and they're going to guide you back into some information that they want you to read, right? And maybe it'll be just tempting enough or just convincing enough that, well, it didn't really come from snakes, but it might, you know, it might have come from a reptile or something. But here's what they found out. Well, number one, fact checkers are liars. They divert from the truth but guide you back to their desired path. Bats, snakes, and pangolins. Snakes was always reported as fake news, right? And I got to see why. Okay, hang on one sec. I hate to be interrupted. Oh, boy. Yeah, nothing. Of course, my phone was buzzing, but it's nothing. And nobody ever bothers me when I'm on the show, so I was interesting. Anyway, this is what they found. When they did genetic sequencing on people who supposedly had the coronavirus infection, and this was in China, which I'm surprised we even have this information. But they did genetic sequencing on the antibodies that they found in people who were sick, who had gotten coronavirus and they were sick. And in that genetic sequencing, they found that the antibodies that the people had formed were most like the genetic sequence of king cobra and the Chinese crate venom. So it was antibodies to the venom proteins or polypeptides or whatever you want to call that part of the venom. So the antibodies people had, they had antibodies to these specific venom proteins from king cobra and the Chinese crate. So remember earlier when I mentioned N-acetylcysteine, nicotinic acetylcholinesterase receptors are in your brain. The one thing that most tightly binds to those receptors are crate and King Cobra venoms. Now you may be saying to yourself, okay, that's kind of a leap. Okay, it's kind of a leap. But just imagine this. So King Cobra venom, when you get bit by King Cobra, yeah, it's going to make you stop breathing. It's going to slow down your respiration, because when you have this venom bound to N-acetylcholinesterase receptors, it kind of paralyzes your ability to breathe, and it slows down your heart, and yeah, it can kill you. So the spike protein, it turns out, is most similar, in other words, proteins in parts of the spike protein are most similar to crate and cobra venom proteins. So, and then there was this doctor, Dr. Bing Liu. He was doing the sequencing on DNA sequencing on the spike protein, or more likely mRNA sequencing on the spike protein. And he was going to make a big announcement, right? He's at a university in Wisconsin, and he had been sequencing the spike protein. He had this huge announcement he was going to make. Well, guess what? He was shot and killed just days before he was going to make the announcement. You know, he had the news conference ready to go, and I'm sure he was really excited about it, because obviously he was a real smart guy, and he, you know, found the information that everybody was looking for. Well, everybody who actually cared to do anything, because obviously, now I haven't looked into this murder case at all. You know, was it just a random killing? I seriously doubt it. But anyway, so he was going to make this, you know, tremendous discovery, announcement to the world. He had sequenced the spike protein, and probably what he was going to say is, hey, don't know what to tell you, but there's all these snake venom proteins in this coronavirus, right? So it turns out that the viral part, I didn't finish that note. Okay, so listen to this. This is the craziest thing. Only one drug is prohibited in the 42-page document of the Emergency Use Authorization for Remdesivir. That drug is hydroxychloroquine. The reason you can't use hydroxychloroquine with remdesivir is because hydroxychloroquine binds tighter to the nicotinic acetylcholinesterase receptors than remdesivir does. So I know probably not all of you are familiar with receptors, and probably a lot of you are. But basically, there's all kinds of molecules that can attach to receptors. We have receptors for everything. One of my favorites is cannabis. Like, why do we have cannabis receptors? Because we've grown up, we've evolved with cannabis in our lives, right? So our bodies have kind of figured out, hey, we like cannabis. It does certain things for us, so we're going to have cannabis cannabinoid receptors in our brains that will allow cannabinoids to do their thing. Well, here's the deal. If something is more, when something competes better, when something binds better to a receptor than anything else, guess what? That thing is going to be bound to that receptor. Or if you have, you know, a million times more of one thing than another, more than likely the receptor is going to have that million more times thing bound to it than the rarer thing. It's just a numbers game. But anyway, so hydroxychloroquine binds to the N-acetylcholinesterase receptors tighter than remdesivir. It also binds tighter than cobra venom or crate venom. These nicotinic receptors in your brain, turns out that nicotine also binds to them. Now, you remember back in the very beginning when coronavirus was a thing, they actually found that smokers weren't a very large number of the making up the demographics of people who were in the hospital. Only 5% of people who were in the hospital were smokers. Which, you know, if you were a smoker back then, you were like, hey, well, we got this one thing going for us. You know, we don't have to worry about coronavirus. Because nicotine, I mean, that's why you have these NIC receptors in your brain, is because nicotine binds to them. You get a source of pleasure. But it also prevents the binding of so many other things. And this specific case is coronavirus. Because this cobra venom and crate venom, let's just assume that those things are in coronavirus, because they found them there. They know that they're there. Man-made, right? Also, you know, the fake news that it came from a snake turns out to be like there's multiple studies out there that shows that the sequencing of these proteins is identical to king cobra and Chinese crate venoms. Okay, so if you already have nicotine, yeah, no, he was shot and killed. Yeah, he was shot and killed. The Asian doctor, yeah, Bing Liu, he was shot and killed. Yeah, not suspicious at all. Young guy. Let me get back to this. It negates the antiviral properties of remdesivir, supposedly. Like, so the government has come out and said, hey, remdesivir has this awesome quality property that it actually interferes with one specific protein of viral replication only in SARS and MERS, M-E-R-S and S-A-R-S. But we're going to go ahead and authorize it for use against coronavirus, because SARS and MERS were coronaviruses, and apparently it interrupted one protein in the replication of those viruses. So, hey, we're just going to go ahead and authorize it. But here's the deal. So the king cobra venom genome was studied for 10 years by a company called Gilead. They found, now hold on to your horses here, they found 19 toxic venom proteins in the king cobra venom, that those specific proteins actually made up the part of venom that actually causes problems for human beings. Don't forget the number 19, but probably many of you are already making that connection. So there's 19 identified proteins in king cobra venom that cause problems for animals, mammals, humans, whatever. So who funded that research? Well, Genentech funded that research, and Genentech is actually owned by Roche. Now, why am I telling you this? Because Gilead, the original company who did the king cobra venom genome study that took 10 years to define the genome of all of these proteins in cobra venom, Gilead is the company that did that study, although they were later purchased by Genentech, and Genentech went in and replaced all of the personnel with their own people, and they took over from there. But Gilead is a company that manufactures remdesivir. So the nicotine acetylcholinesterase receptors can be blocked by hydroxychloroquine, and that's been known since 2005, and chloroquine. Snake venom and remdesivir look the same. Oh, they look the same in the vials when they're delivered to the hospital. So if you had a vial of snake anti-venom and a vial of remdesivir, would look the same. And you prepare it the same. If you look at the preparation notes in the, legal notices that they have to put in such things, they're exactly the same. You mix it with sodium chloride or you mix it with sterile water and you inject it. So you have snake venom, 19 specific proteins that bind to the nicotine acetylcholinesterase receptors in your brain and other tissues in your body that causes problems. Like, so if it binds to your brain, it'll slow down or paralyze your breathing or slow down your heart rate. There are some that are specific for the pancreas, for the liver, for heart tissue, for, myocardial tissue and pericardial tissue, the tissue around your heart. It also causes a cytokine storm when they give you remdesivir. One of the common side effects is a cytokine storm that destroys your lungs completely. This is from the drug that is supposed to keep you alive after you get coronavirus and you need to be hospitalized. Now, let me just hopefully step back a minute and explain this, maybe one more time. So basically, coronavirus has snake venom proteins in it. So however you get that protein in your body, once it gets in your bloodstream, it's going to go bind to the NIC receptors in your brain. It's going to, some of them are going to hunt out your pancreas or your liver or your heart, and it's going to create an inflammation or whatever other damage. Like, it might just kill tissue for that matter, those proteins. Like, I don't know if any of you have seen a rattlesnake bite, but rattlesnake venom has a tissue, it kills tissue right in the area. So, you know, it cuts off the blood supply, it, you know, poisons and destroys tissue. Makes it necrotic. So coronavirus gets in your system. These snake venom proteins go to work wherever they are most likely to work. One of the things that doctors have to do when they administer remdesivir is they have to do a blood test on you and check your prothrombin time. Prothrombin time is the kind of has to do with how long it takes your blood to clot. So they get a pre-remdesivir. I have to laugh a little bit because the treatment of remdesivir, I'll tell you in a minute, it's not going to make you better. So they check your prothrombin time before you get the remdesivir injections. Remdesivir is authorized to be used for 5 days, two times. So you get 10 days of remdesivir. It turns out that on the ninth day, pretty much everybody dies. And doesn't it make sense that if you're trying to get rid of a certain segment of the population, or maybe just a certain number of the population, not only do you infect them with cobra venom, but then you give them a treatment that also contains cobra venom that, you know, will kind of carry them through that last minute. Now, when I think to myself that the government said that remdesivir is effective, I think what they were saying is, look, we expect 80% of the people to die on remdesivir, and yep, we're hitting that number, so it's effective. That's what I think. So anyway, they have to check your prothrombin time before and after getting, and they have to monitor the prothrombin time during the course of treatment of remdesivir. And that's an indication of like how infected you are. If you're getting any better, getting the remdesivir, is your bleeding time shortening? Or if not, you just bleed to death internally, right? But along with remdesivir, they also give you morphine, fentanyl, Ativan or lorazepam, or I forget the other one, but they're all drugs that are used to kill people, basically. They're all used for euthanizing people, right? Or maybe killing people in electric chair. I know there's something else like potassium or something like that. I don't know. I don't know the cocktail they give you when they kill you in the prisons, but anyway, yeah, when people died, they were finding elevated enzymes normally found in viper venoms. And this was, so basically, back to the beginning here. In the beginning, they started testing people to see what antibodies they were making to figure out, well, what are we dealing with? Like, they didn't know. Well, they did. They made it look like they had to figure out what this new disease was that everybody was getting sick with around Wuhan. So they did tests. And, you know, the way they look for things these days is they, you know, find out what is your body making antibodies to. Because you have cells in your body. I mean, the body is an awesome instrument. Like, it can take care of itself. I always tell people, you're going to survive everything in life but one thing. You know, it could be, you know, whatever it is. It could be like a mechanical injury, an accident, you know, or it could be some disease or cancer or whatever. But something is eventually going to kill you. Everything else you're going to survive. Because the body's amazing. That's the thing. It's, we have the ability to fight these things off. And just think about it. So people were living at the time. They were living, you know, through coronavirus. And then people, and then, you know, labs and stuff were testing to see what kind of antibodies that people were making. And then they go back to their big database of antibodies and they look and they go, wow, they're making antibodies to king cobra venom proteins that we just discovered 15 or 20 years ago. And now we have the complete genome mapped, so we know exactly what that protein looks like. We know exactly what the antibody to that protein looks like. And there you go. People had those antibodies. Crate, Chinese crate venom, king cobra venom, antibodies. But it was a bat, of course. So just to make things perfectly clear, what Gilead has done, you know, the makers, the original study began with Gilead on king cobra venom and to map out the entire genome. That was Gilead. Now, Gilead made remdesivir, which supposedly was going to help cure people or, remember, shorten the duration of sickness of people who had coronavirus infection. But here's what they did with it, and it's going to explain a couple things. And I see we're burning through the hour, which is awesome, but we are getting close to wrapping it up. So snake venoms, it turns out, snake venom RNA is the most stable RNA than any others isolated from any other natural source. Isn't that amazing? Snake venom mRNA is the most stable right off the bat. But then they added some things to really make it stable in remdesivir. So they took the mRNA and they wrapped it in nanoparticle hydrogel. So this is a new technology they have. Of course, you've heard of nanotechnology. Now here's a perfect application of it. They have the mRNA from king cobra venom proteins, also referred to as polypeptides. It's just a chain of basically, fatty acids, basically. But now they can actually tag it, wrap it with these nanoparticles of hydrogel, which also makes it a little more stable. And then they finally wrap that with dynabeads. Now, guess what dynabeads are? Dynabeads are a metallic nanoparticle that also increases the stability. So they wanted to make damn sure that this concoction contained mRNA that your body would then use to make stuff that basically was going to kill you. And the nanoparticles, the DynaBeads, DynaBeads are a magnetic metal nanoparticle, which is why if you place a magnet, now listen, so a lot of people tried to put a magnet over this where they got the shot, and they didn't have any reaction. But here's the reason why. Now imagine, it's a tiny little bit of metallic nanoparticle. Nanoparticle. It's not like you slipped a piece of metal under your skin. It's nanoparticles, like however much could be in whatever, a couple mLs of liquid they put in you. So if that shot, well, let's say you were very lean, like you didn't have a lot of fat or muscle on your body, and the shot was given to you, you might get a magnet to stick to it because it would be kind of shallow. But if you were kind of heavy, a little bit overweight, or you had some fat and muscle, it might not stick because it's just too far away. Or let's say it was 2 hours, maybe 6 hours later, you know, your friends told you, oh, a magnet will stick to you now because you got the vax. And you try and stick a magnet and it didn't stick. Well, guess what? It's already started coursing through your body. The second they put it in, your body starts distributing it everywhere. So there's a reason why a magnet would stick or wouldn't stick. But I can pretty much guarantee you those particles are in there. They found them. They've taken apart remdesivir. I mean, it's not like a secret what's in remdesivir. You know, it's pretty well known. Okay, now here's some interesting information. I think I have to get off of. No, I said I was going to go until I was done, so we're going to do that. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put the ending music on pause here so it doesn't interrupt us. Okay, so back to some of this stuff I've covered already, but I'm going to go back to this beginning, back just a little bit. Back to testing the wastewater. So they said in the beginning that they were testing the wastewater to see if new variants were showing up in populations. And then when they said, when they see those variants in the wastewater, they can tell that there's going to be an outbreak in that community. But this is exactly the opposite of what was actually happening. So this coronavirus, and I think I'm going to challenge you to prove this to yourself, because I can prove it here on the homestead, but see if you can prove this to yourself. The coronavirus is not airborne. It is put in the water, and it's distributed to communities, targeted demographic communities. Why? Who's making that decision? I don't know. But when I had that question over a year ago about how in the hell could you have a test for a variant that literally somebody just said showed up yesterday? Like, you know, Omicron. It's like, hey, new variant today. It's called Omicron. And then, you know, we're going to go test the wastewater and see how much Omicron is in the wastewater. No. No. If it showed up yesterday, well, you got to figure out a test to see what's different about that virus that makes it a variant. And then you have to develop some kind of test to test for that one specific change in that virus that makes it a variant, and then you're going to go down and collect wastewater and test the wastewater for the variant. But that's not actually what they were doing. They were actually putting the virus in the water supply, sending it into a community. They were testing the wastewater to make sure they had enough concentration of the virus in the supply water to make sure people were going to get sick. And then, yeah, they can say, hey, there's going to be an outbreak here in, you know, Cucamonga because, you know, we're starting to see it in the wastewater. Well, no, you wouldn't see it in the wastewater until people had already been sick. Like a lot of people been sick. Because you're testing a tiny bit of water out of a bajillion gallons of water, you got to have a certain concentration before it's even going to show up. So they weren't testing for, you know, what people were shedding. They were testing for what they're putting in the water. And yeah, how do they do that? I don't know. They have private contractors coming in. Maybe they just put it in the fluoride that they're shipping out to, or the chlorine that they're shipping out to, you know, these communities. All of these, every big city in the world treats our water. There's no possible way you could actually allow water into a big community without treating it, because if anything is in that water, it's going to make everybody sick, right? Well, that makes perfect sense. Now, there was some pictures, there's some videos on the internet, you've seen them probably, where people held a COVID-19 test under tap water and it tested positive. Does it make sense to you now? Makes sense to me. Cobra venom causes loss of taste and smell for up to a year or so. So what was the one thing that they said was common with coronavirus infection? Is people would lose their sense of taste or their sense of smell. Now, the cobra venom doesn't do that when you get bit normally, but it does if you try and suck venom out of a wound. This has been known forever because people used to think that you could suck the venom out and save somebody's life, and maybe you could if you were quick enough, I guess. But one of the side effects of sucking venom out of a wound is that, yeah, you can lose your sense of taste and your sense of smell. Now, if getting bit by a cobra doesn't cause that loss of taste or smell, but sucking the venom out does, then I guess if you drank the water that had the venom in it, you could very well lose your sense of taste and smell, and it would make perfect sense. It would make perfect sense that it came from the water, and you put it directly in your mouth, and that's why you lost the sense of taste and smell. So any disease, the cobra venom targets certain, or they could target certain demographics by putting the water in certain communities, and, they could actually go into communities and see how many people have heart disease or have, I mean, if you're, so let's say if you're on a website that's for, diabetics, I mean, they can go look at the traffic coming out of some, you know, community and go, man, we got a lot of diabetics here. Let's hit them with this cobra venom and see how many of them survive or how many of them we could get rid of. Yeah, the spike protein. Okay, and here we are back to the spike protein. The spike protein has these venom polypeptides or mRNA pieces in them, proteins in them, and they target the NIC receptors, nicotinic receptors in your brain. Yeah, they give you morphine. Any person that, the average person dies on the ninth day of getting remdesivir. You know, 2 5-day doses are allowed. That's it. Okay, so if there's any questions, please just put them in the comment set, in the chat, or just come to Real Liberty Media. You can contact me there, leave an email, sign up as a subscriber, or whatever, and just leave an email. Some of you have my, you know, email already, or text, or can catch me in the chat. But I'm going to do another short segment about this, because I know there's a lot of people that are like anti-religious, and I'm going to give those people a chance not to hear stuff that they're just going to go, oh, that's stupid. So I'm going to do a small segment that'll be, kind of some things about this whole situation that has more of a religious connection. And that way people can listen to it or not, but I think it'll be enjoyable. Anyway, I just want to tell you guys, I thank you for joining me. And I hope there was something in this. I hope I didn't make it more complex. I hope I made it a little bit easier to understand. And if a lot of questions come up, I'll visit it again. But I just thought it was amazing. I want to thank Dr. Brian Artis for doing the research. I want to thank Stu Peters for putting together this great documentary, Watch the Water. You can only catch it on BitChute and Rumble, as far as I know. So go to those two places. Find Watch the Water, Stu Peters Network. Give him some credit. Give him a thumbs up. Listen and decide for yourself if that's helpful.